Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Welcome to Alpha Talks Editors Roundtable, what moved the markets this week, the week ending Friday, July 31st, 2020, last week of July here. I am joined by Brad Olison, VP of News, Stephen Alfer, Managing Editor of Breaking News, and our special guest, Jason Aycock, Senior Editor of Media and Telecoms. Aaron Task is on holiday this week. Okay, it's almost August, but it was a very busy week. A lot happened. We had a massive GDP report for the second quarter that was horrible. We had Fed testimony and the Fed decision. We had a bunch of earnings. And we also had still ongoing negotiations in Washington, D.C. over a fiscal package extension or a new fiscal package. Those are ongoing. Today is the deadline, July 31st, presumably at midnight. So that situation is still very fluid. Despite all that, interestingly enough, stocks did not really move all that much. A little bit. We're about flat for the S&P 500 as we record this at noon on Friday. And the Dow is down a bit. I think the tech stocks have done well, but perhaps not as well as one might believe, given the earnings that we had. So, like I said, a lot for us to unpack. Maybe let's start with Bradley Olison to give us a little bit more background on this and tell us about the winners and losers.
So obviously this week, as you mentioned, was mostly an earnings oriented week. And so with that, we've moved away from the binary moves in the market where it's virus on, virus off, and we're now into more idiosyncratic moves. I characterize it as more of a old world, new world situation. We had Intel, which is their earnings massively underperformed after their product delay. Their stock sold off a bunch. Seagate Technology, also one of these more traditional storage, hardware storage companies, they also suffered terribly from some of these pandemic related issues. And then you had the new world like AMD, Nvidia, the graphics cards makers. They did well this week, kind of capitalizing on Intel's woes. And then Boeing and GE, also stalwarts of an industrial age, they suffered this week on the back of their earnings. I guess not so much surprise for Boeing, given most of their planes are grounded. GE was struggling. They're looking to monetize their Baker Hughes stake. This was their foray into the more traditional oil and energy plays. So a little bit of an old world, new world dichotomy with big tech, as we saw late Thursday, broadly higher on the back of Amazon's results, Apple's results, Alphabet's results, which exceeded expectations, although they did show a contraction on the top line year over year. So there was obviously a heavily earnings focused week, but one of the bigger stories I think that has led to some of the underperformance has been the rates situation. And we've seen that financials are now banks and financials were one of the worst performing sectors this week after energy. A lot of that has to do with some of the real rates situation. The 10-year yield is now hit multi-century lows this week. As Deutsche Bank's Jim Reid characterized, the U.S. has gone through depressions, deflations, gold standard regimes, market crashes, wars, and none of them push the yields to the situation that we're in now. This has also had a secondary effect on the dollar, right? The Bloomberg Dollar Index slumped to its lowest level since February 2019. That was even at the beginning of the week before the rates slipped even further. And so that's led, I think some like Goldman to start to call for the end of the dollar's currency reserve status. We've heard that trope before, but when the dollar starts to sell off a little bit, you have these people coming out of the woodwork. You can always argue that this time may be different. That's yet to be seen. But for me, banks were very interesting sector, especially on the back of news that, that Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway is continuing to build its stake in the name. So a lot of moving parts this week, but for me, there were some structural issues on the yield side and a huge flurry of earnings.
Yeah. And on the earnings front, our special guest will talk a little more in depth about the Facebook, Apple, Alphabet, and Google. I guess Google and Alphabet are the same thing. But there were a number of tech earnings that you touched on, and he's here to shed some light on that. Stephen Halfer, what about you? Corporate news and what else caught your eye this week?
I'll point to a couple of earnings reports we didn't talk about earlier. One being UPS, which unsurprisingly had a massive blowout of a quarter, which you would expect if Amazon's killing it. UPS is probably killing it too. But the
blowout in a good way. Blowout in a good way.
Right, but the market reaction shot UPS went way higher, suggesting somehow prognosticators had not figured out that UPS was going to have a big quarter, because I think the stock was up double digits yesterday after reported. FedEx was up in concert. Though not as much as UPS. And I'll point to, as I like to do, something maybe a little bit under the radar, which is Ollie's Bargain Basement. They pre-announced either late last week or early this week, comp sales were up 40% year over year for Q2, or that's what it's going to end up being when they finally report, which is a crazy number. And you say to yourself, how does a big box store like that do that? Well, Ollie's, they got themselves classified as an essential business, and they stayed open during the pandemic. During the shutdowns, we're still in the pandemic. And as we're seeing with Amazon, there's fewer places for people to shop. The stores did quite well. But what's really shocking to me is in a Q2, as we know now, the economy shrank by about one third. But Amazon and Apple both reported record quarters. Real remarkable when you think about it in the terms.
Perfect lead in to Jason. Jason, give us, what's your take on the earnings that you saw this week from the tech side?
Well, first of all, I just had to share my initial impression of what happened yesterday, because investors will know it's sort of an unusual thing for these four companies to line up like this. And at least in the soft light of the release of the earnings, the initial impression was, wow, look at these blowouts. And only the first thing I thought was, what if these earnings had come right before the big high-profile tech hearing, where these four CEOs went up there and had to kind of stand their ground and defend themselves against the idea that they're powerful. Those hearings came first, and all I can do is think about, oh, what would have happened if they just actually held those hearings after blowing out earnings all over the place. Now, I think that things are a little more sober in the light of day as analysts took a look, because the earnings clearly did outperform. It's the kind of thing that, as Brad talked about, old world, new world. I think in the old world, a night like that would have led you to believe that Friday would be a blowout win day across the board. But there's a lot of other factors going on across the market. Analysts are taking a look at these results, and while they were strong, I feel like there's a lot of reversion to the mean in the way people are talking about these four companies, in the sense that they're saying, well, yes, things were great, but Facebook showed some deceleration. As Brad noted, Google actually contracted across the top line for the first time in their history. So when you read across reactions today, it seems like a lot of them are saying a lot of the things they're saying about other companies in the market. Things in the second half are going to depend on some macro recovery. That applies for Facebook and Google, are heavily ad dependent. And so regardless of the different ways they came into earnings, a lot of how they perform from here, there's some caution, there's some pullbacks. Of course, that has to be put in context to these particular stocks, right? Facebook is expected to guide conservatively. So yes, there'll be some more deceleration in the second half. Will they probably beat again in the second half? There's a good chance of that.
You were on a couple of weeks ago to talk about Facebook being hit with all these boycotts. Did they address that at all, and did that come through to the bottom line yet, and was there anything reported there?
But that's interesting. I think that's the debate today, is how much of this how much of this was a boycott, how much did the boycott have an effect on the earnings. It was kind of late in the quarter, and so there's definitely some effect. I don't know if there's enough for people to get a good read through on exactly what happened. And it's very hard to distinguish that from the general slowdown that all ad-facing companies are facing. Mm. So I think it's a little early to say. That doesn't mean it's not subject for debate. Certainly people are talking today about the boycott, but I think attributing too much of their deceleration to the boycott would be overstating it when you look at the industry-wide slowdown in advertising.
Well, no, I would have to add on energy. I think that was that's an interesting area where obviously it's a much smaller percentage of the S&P than it ever has been. And I think in recent memory, it was again one of the worst performing sectors this week. I like to keep my eye on it only because everyone likes to look at copper as the indicator for the global health, right? And if we're looking to try to move out of this crisis and where the market is moving, it's clear that we can't look to the industrial metals as those clues anymore with how the dollar is performing and how gold has popped out to new highs. I think gold is up near 2,000. There were record six-week inflows into the yellow metal there, according to the latest EPFR data. But we can't use copper and these industrial metals anymore as that litmus test for how the economy is going to be doing. And I think for the way we can look at it is for energy and when that seems to turn around. Even though China and others are recovering, I think U.S. is going to be that incremental demand driver. And until, you know, as long as there's still a ton of supply, I would look to that sector as a form of recovery and so a first clue, a canary in the coal mine, if you will, as to where we get out of it. We had a few earnings reports this week, and for all intents and purposes there's no good signs yet. But I would try to keep my eyes on that sector right now. USO, I think, is still down 50% from its pre-pandemic levels. But given the fact that it was one of the worst performing sectors this week, I thought it warranted a mention.
Mm-hmm. And just this morning, Exxon reporting and missing estimates on revenue, and the stock is down about 1% as we record this, which is maybe not quite as bad as you would expect, but it is down some 40% on the year, it looks like.
Right. And then you had National Oil Well, Varco, and a few others, which performed pretty terribly over the week. So even though Exxon is one of those large integrated oil names, there were definitely some outliers, which were, you know, pretty terrible. I think we had another struggling energy company, Valaris, is I think they're poised for some sort of bankruptcy filing soon. So there's still a lot of struggles in that sector. And until we see a recovery there, I think we're a little ways away from getting out of the woods.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys make of this fiscal package? I'm kind of a little bit surprised that I'm not hearing more about it, just because this could be a big thing. And people's benefits, unemployment benefits, $600 a week, I believe already expired. And now unless there's a deal, there's not going to be any new stimulus, I don't think. So is that kind of what's been holding the market back, you think, or what's the latest stuff that you hear from this?
I don't know that it's holding the market back. I think the market that has run up quite a bit. I think the stocks that would benefit from a stimulus, namely Amazon, is doing just fine. Thank you very much. I think it's typical Washington back and forth. The sausage isn't made easy. There's meetings. People come out of meetings saying we're nowhere close to a deal. People yell at each other, fight at each other in the press. But eventually some sort of deal will come about. I don't think it will be quite as generous as the $600 a week and additional unemployment benefits. But it appears that it'll be some sort of deal where stimulus checks will get sent, where there will be some additional unemployment benefit. They just have to figure out the exact numbers.
And let's keep in mind that the Fed was pretty dovish expectedly this week. So I don't know, we don't have to necessarily say that the market's ahead of itself. There's stimulus as far as the eyes can see, at least on the monetary side of the equation. And we can all say, we can also remark about the thinking that was heard around the world, right? He's now not thinking about raising rates, which is that the third thinking in there. Up from two. Yes.
Yeah, so I get the sense he's not thinking about it, I guess, is the bottom line. All right, let's move on to the next segment of the show where we discuss the our favorite articles that, from Seeking Alpha and elsewhere that we've seen and in some cases even edited this week. And why don't we start with our guest, Jason?
Well, you would expect me to select something about the tech earnings as my favorite story article of the week. I have to say my favorite article, the thing that's been occupying my mind today, is our coverage yesterday of Seth Klarman talking about the Fed's approach to the market and how it's infantilizing the market. And I have to say, so Klarman said that the Fed is infantilizing the market. It's created a surreal situation. He said, he says, and I quote, "It's as if the Fed considers them foolish children, unable to rationally set the prices of securities, so it must intervene." And I got to say, the thing on my mind today is how egocentric is the hedge fund world to think that the entire context of his comments were as though the Fed's entire purpose is market based as opposed to Main Street based. I think other commenters have noted that the Fed isn't just there to support equity prices; they're there with a dual mandate that's related to the economy. But in reading through the comments, and I don't have access to his whole letter, I only saw the reported comments, but it struck me just what kind of a disconnect there is between, you say, your average hedge funder who is wondering, why won't the Fed pull back support? Why can't the Fed take the training wheels off this market? And the actual things the Fed has to do. I actually think the Fed's got a little bit of a thankless job here. That may put me in the minority, but I found that all fascinating just to kind of see that mindset. And I think it's sort of pretty typical of other times the market's run up this high. Is I think a lot of investors are nervous. There's probably going to be more volatility ahead as people try to figure out when the bottom might come out. We just alluded to unemployment ending. I think that when that support ends and you see a lot of data coming out, ripple effects from that, I think once retail investors get an idea of what kind of evictions are coming, there might be some pain ahead for the market, but it's always very interesting to consider when people look at the context of, is the Fed still supporting the market? Does the Fed put still exist? And I found that all very fascinating. I said, it is surreal. And it's surreal that these articles are being written from the idea that the Fed is there strictly with one window on the market and nothing else.
I'll just take a quick issue with what Jason said to describe Klarman as an average hedge funder. Klarman is far from an average hedge funder. He's actually generated great returns for his investors for several decades. But I do agree this is basically a variation of the letter Seth Klarman's been writing to his clients for many years, kind of bemoaning Fed support, bemoaning low interest rates, bemoaning government deficits. So, but somehow while railing against that stuff, somehow he still makes successful investments for his clients.
And didn't he make some mention to 30-year-olds living with their parents? There was some sort of pejorative tone to his comments. It was clearly not lighthearted in any respect. But
yeah, the market's living in the Fed's basement, apparently. And so now it's just a matter of the Fed summoning the will to kind of boot the kids out, apparently.
Yeah, the Fed certainly has its critics no matter what they do, and especially if they inject liquidity, apparently. Nothing new there. We've been hearing it for 10 years or more. All right, Stephen, what about you? Favorite articles, favorite stories?
I have two. I'll try to go through them quickly, so it seems like one. One was, I think we shouldn't go through without mentioning the action in Kodak, the old Eastman Kodak, which started the week at about $2.50 a share. Rose to as high as $60 a share, is currently, I think, in the low 20s. And the catalyst for that was they received a loan from the or deal for a loan from the government to convert basically an idled factory of theirs into domestic generic drug production facility. And it goes to show kind of there's a number of things, a speculative fervor about and the whole COVID deal, and so it brings those two together and brings a third thing together, which is the onboarding of domestic drug production. Maybe there are other companies with other idled factories to look for in that case. The other item I saw was in our fund letters coverage. Horizon Kinetics this week had their their most recent quarterly letter that's run by Murray Stahl, who in my mind is kind of legendary for picking Texas Pacific Land Trust out of somewhere many a couple of decades ago, and it's basically compounded in the high teens to low 20s for Horizon investors for a couple of decades now. Stahl makes the case for that we're on the cusp or already in the return of inflation. I don't know whether I agree with him or not, but it made for a very interesting read.
Hmm. All right. Bradley, what about you?
So for me, I'm just trying to keep that forward-looking view and when we can move towards normalcy. So for I saw an interesting...
Never. There will never be normal.
Not at this rate. And unfortunately for some industries, that decline will be long-term in nature. I saw the landmark release window deal with Universal from AMC Theaters shortening the window, the exclusive period when these theaters have the rights to run these brand new movies. You know, I think that was emblematic of the crisis that we're in. They don't see an end soon to the pandemic, when we can move to normalcy, and it's shifted the power into the hands of the creators of these movies. And at the same time, we saw news that the other side of the coin, Tenet, this major blockbuster release, was normalizing a time release. So I think they're going to launch in the U.S. around Labor Day. Jason can correct me if I'm wrong there, with an international release shortly ahead of that. So interesting in the fact that, you know, usually these U.S. releases will launch in China or maybe the U.S. first. International population gets first crack at this major blockbuster due to the virus situation that's unfolding. But looks like for movie theaters going forward, even though the shares did respond positively to this deal, the shortening of that window to 17 days from 75, I think just getting that certainty was all these theaters needed for that quick boost. But, you know,
we just add
more to add. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think what you're seeing is an isolated. I mean, that's not going to just happen in the one theater. It's not happening overnight. But this that breaks a window that other people are going to have trouble holding the pieces together in midair. I think you're going to see these deals ripple through. This is going to become. There's a good chance this becomes the industry standard. And if you ask consumers, consumer reaction is like, well, you know, why didn't it happen 5 years ago? We're ready to do this. Right. So obviously, the studios and the exhibitors have a mutual interest in the exhibition. But as Brad noted, the power shifted a little bit. We don't see the numbers. We don't see exactly what AMC is going to share in this digital revenue a little bit. We don't know what the percentage is. We don't know what the mix is. But you're definitely going to see this. You haven't seen exactly what's going to happen with Cinemark, with Regal, with IMAX, these other folks. But you're going to see it actually ripple quickly. And I think this is going to become the new standard industry-wide in very short order.
Can we short popcorn makers? Do we have a stock for that? I guess that's the next question.
So we're not anywhere near having the cinemas, the movie houses be open again in any capacity?
Well, the expectation, so as Brad alluded to, they want to do slightly different, as he mentioned. Usually, if something doesn't open in the U.S. first, you might see it bow in China a week ahead of time. This is unusual because they want to open Tenet in 70-plus countries before the U.S., and not at all in China at the moment, with their cinemas still closed. Now, what interests me is opening a week ahead of the U.S. elsewhere is one thing, but they're doing that, as Brad mentioned, because of the better situation with the virus in other countries. What happens when, as a lot of people think, the U.S. bows to reality and keeps pushing back other things, fall sports, college football, and movies again? If we check on the numbers in 2 or 3 weeks, and things are not better, not appreciably better. Things are plateauing in a lot of the hot spots, but if they're still at the high levels they are now, there's a good chance that cinemas might not be able to reopen by Labor Day. Then you see another delay when the movies open elsewhere, and that's a very new situation. So it's a lot up in the air. I don't think it'll be a surprise when I talk about the market or any stocks is saying things are low visibility right now.
Mm. Yeah. You know, speaking of the sports, we also had the NBA start this week. Maybe that's why volumes are low, is that sports are back, baseball is back, and your Dave. What's that? Not in Philadelphia or Miami, but the Davey Day Traders of the world are back to gambling.
Apparently not Milwaukee or St. Louis now.
Oh, I missed that. Is that the latest now?
I heard today that they're their game for tonight has been canceled because somebody in one of the organizations tested positive for COVID. I don't know the details beyond that.
Right. And the SEC saying they will go to a conference-only schedule this fall, right, following the Big Ten.
Right.
And a couple of others, which isn't great, but at least they haven't canceled anything. All right. So lastly, my story, what I like this, I like to go to the, for the contrarian views often. And this one by Dr. X, is it Dr. X or Dr. RX? I think it's just Dr. X. Why gold may be in for a fall this summer. With all of the bullishness around gold and all the movement that we've seen in gold going to record highs, he is saying that there are technical and fundamental reasons leading me to think that a pause that refreshes may await the price of gold soon. So he's not outright short, but he's saying that there's good reasons for a cooling off period. So, which is more than anybody else is saying when it comes to gold. I mean, everything I've been seeing is bullish. All right, on that, let's close for the week. Thank you all for listening, and we look forward to speaking to you again next time.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to seekingalpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.